Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the How We Interview podcast. In this episode, I had the pleasure of catching up with my longtime friend, Dan DeGraw. Dan is a senior graphic designer at Wells Fargo. He kind of marries his artistic ability with the ability for an organization to be able to brand themselves effectively. Dan's incredibly talented, kind of ticks me off really, but I love his journey and how he's kind of turned his passion into helping organizations recruit better. So with that, enjoy the episode. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the How We Interview podcast. With me is Dan DeGraw, senior graphic designer at Wells Fargo. Daniel, thank you for joining.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm doing well.
It's my pleasure.
My pleasure.
Before we get into introductions, we should probably talk, and we had talked about this, like if we were going to do an episode together, we would do it with a cocktail in this case. So we are each drinking bourbon in our various locations. What are you enjoying today, Dan?
I am enjoying Weller Special Reserve. It's my go-to drinker when you can find it. Whenever I see it on the shelves, I buy a bottle of it.
That's Green Label for those of you not bourbon connoisseurs. I'm drinking Holiday Soft Red Wheat Tennessee Whiskey. And this kind of leads into my story. By the time we publish this, it'll be on the other side of 25 episodes. And I've met a ton of amazing people to the point where I'm embarrassed how many awesome people I've met. But this is the first time I've actually had a chance to spend some time with somebody in a podcast who I've known you for excess of 40 years.
Yeah. Seventh grade?
Maybe even earlier?
Yeah, I think earlier when we played youth soccer together. I don't think we knew each other really, but...
We did. Yeah, I think we were probably in fourth or fifth or who knows. It was a long time ago because we're both...
It's a long
time. But it's fun because we know each other for so long and so well that it's a little different experience than meeting somebody, you know, for the first time. So I appreciate you being on. I also appreciate, and the reason why I mentioned the fact that imbibing on this episode is that you and your father got me into drinking whiskey, which I'm not sure if that's a blessing or a curse, but I do think it's appropriate that we're celebrating.
I think it's appropriate, but at this point, I believe it's a bit of a curse.
I'm not going to lie. Usually in the mornings it is. So one of the reasons I want to do this, one is you're one of my favorite people on this planet, and it's a very small one.
You. Wait. You mean me and Alon and those 25 other people that you interviewed prior?
That's the first time I've said it, and I mean it. But the other thing that's interesting is your background is, and I know you're super shy about this. Your background is fascinating. So I mentioned you're a senior graphic designer at Wells Fargo, but can you talk a little bit about what that means in terms of like what's your day to day and how does like the senior graphic designer part play?
Sure. So day to day, I am supporting our recruitment lines, different recruitment lines of businesses. So we have different recruiting teams, like the military recruiting team, early talent team, et cetera. And they work with our team, the global attraction talent team. They work with our team to activate the campaigns that they have and to consult with us about, you know, they say they want to do something in particular. They might come to us with the need and it's with what they want. And then it's up to us to consult with them and kind of really suss out what it is that they actually need and how and the best way that we can help activate that for them. So day to day, I'm in Illustrator, the Adobe Creative Suites, doing layouts, you know, just not crazy stuff, but just a lot of stuff because it's a lot of people that I say we now because there's two of us recently, but up until just a couple of weeks ago, it's been me supporting our whole recruitment.
Universe.
Yeah, the whole recruitment universe at Wells Fargo. So it's been me primarily doing most of that visual work. So if you see something visually from Wells Fargo asking you if you want to work at Wells Fargo, I probably have my fingerprint on it.
Quite literally. As long as I've known you've been an artist, I mean, you were always doodling when we were kids. And it's fascinating to me how you're able to kind of take your passion and make a career out of it. Not everybody gets to do that. I mean, I have no skills. So jumping on the creative side. So the fact you've been able to do that, I think is amazing. We had the opportunity to work together when I was at Wells and it was super fun. If I'm listening to this and I'm like, this is crazy. Like I could need somebody like that. Like if somebody doesn't have a Dan, everybody should have a Dan, but if somebody doesn't have a Dan, like, in your mind, what is that job done well? Because I know some organizations probably have an agency they use, like, look, I need a PDF for this, or I need a flyer, or I need that. But we're talking far more strategic work that is this part of your day-to-day scope. Like, typically, given what you do, like, what's the best way to leverage somebody like yourself?
Well, the advantage to having a Dan on your team, me specifically, is that I'm a lot closer to the work and I understand the work a lot more intimately than an agency partner would. An agency partner is only going to give you work as good as the brief that you give them. So if you don't quite understand what it is that you're looking for, or you only think you know what you're looking for, and you create a brief around, that's the output that you'll get from that creative agency. You'll get, you know, some consultative work. They'll, of course, do the same type of work that I do, where it's, they think about things from a different bent or a creative standpoint. But I am in the work day to day, and I see the needs of all the teams. And I'm not just looking at the need of the single line of business that's asking me for a thing. I'm thinking about it through the filter of, how does this make sense next year through all of our campaigns? How can I tie that need into the early talent team, or, you know, any of the other teams, so that we look like a cohesive Wells Fargo? We have a singular message that might be branched off and tailored to those individual lines of businesses. I don't think you're going to get that from a creative agency. And then the other thing that is helpful too is just speed. I can turn a graphic around really fast, like a simple graphic, where as if you work with an agency, frequently you're going to work through an account manager, and they're going to bring in a project manager, and then they're going to brief the graphic designer. And so you've got a telephone going back and forth. It just takes time. And I get it. I mean, they want to get it right. I want to get it right. It's just that I am embedded, so I can react a little faster that way.
And so you've got your day-to-day work, like the blocking and tackling. I need this, I need that. But then if you zoom back, like, you're intimately involved in basically the entire kind of graphical and photographic representation of your employer brand at work every day. And so on one hand, you've got the kind of the tactical work. And then on the other side, you get involved in photo shoots or website layouts or branding treatments or whatever that may be. Is it challenging to move between the super tactical work to the more long-term strategic work?
Yeah, sometimes the nuts and bolts, like I call it my day-to-day work. That's just like doing the layouts. Sometimes you just have a ton of that stuff to plow through. And that's really more production-oriented. And you're not really, you keep that filter in the back of your head, like, you know, who it connects to and how it connects to all the other lines. But it's a lot of that is just plowing through the work and getting checked off your to-do list. I don't have a hard time switching between the two. I prefer to do more strategic thinking and connecting the dots. And I come from a human-centered design background. So I'm always thinking about how people are going to be using this. What's that user experience like? When you ask for something, I ask a lot of questions, much sometimes to my detriment or to other people's frustration. But those are really important up front, because if you don't ask those questions and you're not challenging the person with that ask, then you're not really helping them out. You're just, you're just providing the burger, essentially.
You want fries with that, right? I mean, it'd be easy just to be an order taker.
Yeah, really. And it's like, being an order taker doesn't help them specifically. It doesn't help the business. It doesn't help the mission of what we're trying to do. And that's where a more consultative role comes in creatively, to be able to connect those dots, to be able to think about things outside the box and think about the need a little more creatively than what is being presented to us.
Yeah. And I think there's a certain amount of helping, me use the word suss, or helping suss out maybe what the intent of the person is, even like how they're communicating. You might actually be the destination or the right output.
Exactly. It's a lot of like, well, who's your audience? Where is this going to be ultimately? Who's viewing this? How is it going to be used? A lot of those types of questions. And sometimes when you're asking those questions, it really triggers the person with the need to think more deeply about what it is they're asking for and what they use and what they're using. I mean, a good example is like, hey, can you update this PowerPoint file? We're going to do a and we're going to run it on loop at a recruiting event. Okay, I can do that. And I could just update it the way you wanted to and turn it back to you. But is that really the best use of that monitor, that screen? Could we be running other things on it? Could it be interactive? Who's going to be there to, is it going to be self-guided? Is someone going to be there to help present the information? So there's a lot that goes into it that isn't necessarily thought of. And when that initial request comes in as, can you update this file?
Yeah. I think one of the fun things about your job, you probably don't think this is fun. One of the fun things about your job is it's all fun, but like the thing you do may be the funnest part of somebody else's job. And the example I'll use is this.
Absolutely.
You're like, everybody's got an opinion. Doesn't mean it's a good one, but everybody's got an opinion. How do you manage expectations when then someone's like, you know, I draw a little, or I dabble in Illustrator. How do you kind of manage expectations and opinions as well-intentioned as they are, but like kind of detract from the true intent of the work?
This episode of How We Interview is brought to you by Riambi. You understand the importance of maximizing your team's efficiency. Instead of having your recruiters or coordinators spend time with expense reports to reimburse candidates for interview expenses, automate the process with Riambi. Riambi streamlines the reimbursement process, ensuring your candidates receive their reimbursement quickly and accurately. Your team can focus on other essential aspects of the hiring process by eliminating reimbursement tasks from their workload. Automating reimbursements is a significant improvement to the candidate experience. No more dealing with spreadsheets, attaching receipts to emails, or waiting weeks to receive the payout. With Riambi, the reimbursement payout to your candidates is sent the same day expenses are approved. To learn more about how Riambi can help your team, visit Riambi.com. That's Riambi, R-E-I-M-B-I.com.
No, I love that. I welcome it. If somebody has a napkin sketch of something that they want, you take a photo of it and send it to me, and we'll talk through what it is that you want. I want to create with people. I don't want to be the person who's like, well, just let me do it and I'll turn something back to you. If you've got a great idea, I'm here to help you realize what that idea is. And I can do that in lots of different ways. I can just create the thing that you wanted and refine it and make it look nice. I can take your initial idea and add to it, or we could just take that idea and kind of talk and use that as an initial jumping off point just to talk through what it is that you're looking for. So I like love it when somebody comes to me with an idea or like a napkin sketch or like an Illustrator file that looks rough, or a PowerPoint that's just like the information is just kind of thrown on it. You know what? That's awesome. That gives me way more to work with than somebody just asking me a small, like, you know, ask to update something.
Yeah, I've got this thing. I mean, they put you through 16 rounds of repeat because you can't read their mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people, and most of the time, like you said, this is like the most fun part of somebody's day. If they get to work on a presentation, that might be like their creative outlet. And I don't want to take that away from anybody because I don't want to diminish that, because everybody wants to have some sort of creative outlet. And I think everybody should have that sort of a thing. So I encourage it. When somebody wants to do their own thing in PowerPoint, I mean, because that's a lot of what I'm doing also, is like fixing presentations and cleaning up stuff like that, because everybody has PowerPoint. That's a graphic tool that it's not the best thing to use, but everybody has it. So frequently I'll work within that for like a template or something. So it's a usable tool that somebody can use instead of, you know, me just sending them like a native Illustrator file. That doesn't help them.
Yeah. Well, and it's just a reality of our roles, is that PowerPoint's kind of a common language.
Yeah, you know, it is.
If it's not PowerPoint, it's Google, whatever it may be. Presentations are a common language I think everybody can understand.
Yeah. And you got to meet people where they're at. I can't come at them and throw them a bunch of like technical, you know, Adobe jargon, because they won't understand it. So when they do ask about something, you know, I try to help them and explain what it is that I'm doing. So there's a lot of like learnings. I don't just send them a file. And sometimes it's like, can you send me a vector file? Sure, I'll send them like an EPS file and an AI file. And then almost always I get an email back, that file doesn't open. Can you send me one that works?
Software.
Yeah, that's exactly. It doesn't, you're not meant to open that file. So instead of just doing that, I'll send them a JPEG of what I'm sending so they can see what I'm sending. And I'll explain to it, you know, the first two file types are for your vendor or for the person that needs it, a vector file. You won't be able to open it because you don't have the software. This is what I'm sending. So I try to like be a little more explanatory of what I'm doing and why I'm doing it so that there's not that like, you know, frustration between, you know, I'm not getting frustrated. Like, why do they keep asking me? They're not getting frustrated. Why do they keep sending me something that I can't open? Everybody kind of knows. It's just about communicating.
Yeah. So you're an artist / graphic designer first, talent acquisition professional second. You came to that a little bit later in your career. I'd love to hear your thoughts on like, what must that be like to transition into an industry? Once again, not highly creative, can be highly tactical. What was that transition like? And then like, you know, kind of going forward, where, you know, where do you see your journey going in the recruiting space?
You were to tell, if I was to tell 30-year-old me that I would be working in HR at a bank, I would be like, where's the off ramp to this dystopic future? Like, I don't want this. But I kind of fell into it. So, because I'd been working in, so full transparency about, you know, and the reason I'm going to bring this up is because there's a lot of talk now about like non-traditional pathways to employment and to work. We're removing a lot of like educational requirements. We're talking about more skill-based things. And that's how I came up. I was a terrible student. I had rampaging ADHD as a high schooler. And so that didn't really set me up for a college career. And then at the time too, in the late 80s, early 90s, there was a real crossover between like doing things manually, like graphic design, and now things are done by a computer. So I was right there on that cusp of that. And I could see those like art schools that taught like very manual, like, you know, doing business forums and things with tech pens. I'm like, this isn't going nowhere. So that education wouldn't have even served me. And I kind of saw that. So I just jumped right into what's the first thing I can do to get into this kind of field to be a graphic designer? And that was like through working in sign shops.
Mm-hmm.
So I just started literally doing that. And I learned a lot doing that sort of work and doing that sort of real production-based work, because it taught me that I'm not just creating something on a computer or on a page. It is going to be made into a real thing that people need to use. So you need to think more holistically about the design. And that really served me through my, you know, a career moving up and up. I mean, I moved through sign shops. I got my first real graphic design job which I call a real graphic design job because it was actually called a graphic designer, at an exhibit in company doing trade show exhibits. And I took on the work that nobody wanted to do, like the boring trade show, you know, grindy type work. And that was the kind of stuff that I was always like, hey, if nobody else wants to do it, that's the stuff I'm going to do, because I'm going to do the best job I can at it. And so I started working on like, you know, the Microsoft account and the Cisco Systems account and the stuff that the museum designers didn't want to work on, because that was like, you know, I don't want to do that. I'm not going to sell out. I'm like, man, I just want to feed my family and have a job. And
so, one day.
You'd be yeah.
I do to take care of my love. For sure.
Yeah. If I can pay my mortgage doing this, hey man, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I was taking on all that work, and it just kind of like worked all the way up through to the point where I got burned out on doing that like really grindy work, because it is a grind. I mean, you are pushing hard, you're putting a lot of work out, and you're like squeezing everything creatively out of yourself to try to make things new and interesting every, you know, 2-3 weeks. And it's just, it gets really difficult. So, you know, years and years later, I'm working at a company as a designer, and a Nike job comes up, and I had been working with Nike on the vendor side for like 10 years. And then this was a job in Nike. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to apply for it just to see what happens. And I applied for it, got an interview. And it turns out the way the job was written was not at all what the job actually was. And in my interview, I was like, so, I mean, because I, at this point, I'm older and I've got like nothing to lose. So I'm like, you know, I need to explore the questions you're asking about what I'm doing do not match the description at all the job. And I'm like, and so it's not a great candidate experience. And so I started talking about the candidate experience to the person that I'm interviewing with, basically telling them the job description wasn't very good and here's how they could make it better. And lo and behold, the job itself was in talent acquisition. So I must have said something not too offensive or enough, right, that I got this job. And it was not what I was used to, because I was doing a real mix of like graphic design, graphic production, and installation and delivery. I mean, I was like the whole Swiss Army knife. And I jumped at this opportunity to not have to carry an 80-pound tool bag through an airport to go to an install, only to turn right around and come home and start working on the next project. So this was awesome. So I got the job and I realized that this actually is really cool work. I get to help not just market like really expensive, you know, products to people and make what I used to call making expensive garbage.
Yeah.
You would design stuff in 3 weeks, you know, design it, produce it, install it, and then it would go right in the dumpster. And that really wears on you after a point. And so I went from making expensive garbage to helping people get jobs that could change their lives, and to helping veterans transition from the military to a job in, you know, at a corporation, or helping people right out of college, or helping different diversity dimensions get positions and market that. And it felt meaningful to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember we made the change. I was already working in TA, which I kind of fell into this as well. And I just, it was crazy to me how awesome a fit it is for you. My glass is almost empty and we're getting close to time. I have one more question, maybe a question and a half, but it's like, if I'm listening to this and I'm like, I've got a gift, whether it's you're graphically inclined or whatever it may be, and you want to get into talent acquisition, what advice would you give to somebody who maybe it's a non-linear job path, but they should, you know, what should they do to pursue that?
Take on the work that nobody else wants to take on. And somebody says, hey, we've got a trade show coming up and we don't know how to coordinate it. Volunteer to coordinate it. Volunteer to do those presentations. And don't just play around in the program. Actually kind of look out and see, like, you know, there's lots of programs out there now. Like Canva is free. Load Canva and play around with it. Look into like different, it's not just about like doing presentations, but there's actual like graphic design knowledge that you can learn online. So be curious and hungry.
I do think that in the world we live in, information is so much easier to get to. It's easy to become an expert without, you know, formal.
You're motivated.
Yeah. Or I shouldn't say easy. It takes a certain amount of motivation and interest, but it is easy to, even outside of like the four walls of your job, to really make yourself burst in something that can help you move toward whatever that next thing is.
Yeah, totally. I mean, if you want it bad enough, you can make it happen. And I happened to, from the time I was in high school, it was a singular focus. I want to be a graphic designer. And if the easy path or the linear path didn't work for me, I was going to find another path. So I would just say, find that path that works for you to get to where you need to be. If you have a roadblock, move around it and figure out a way to move past it. But absolutely, anybody that has any sort of creative need to express themselves, do it. Absolutely do it.
Don't push it down. Like you've got to absolutely attack your passions.
Yeah.
Gift like yourself. It would be a crime if you weren't able to use your gifts, you know, and leverage them to mean your career.
Absolutely.
Yeah. 100%. I appreciate your time. I enjoyed this way too much. The content.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, of course. The cocktail thing was a nice touch. If somebody wants to reach out to you and they have some further questions, what's the best way to connect with you?
You know what? You can probably, you can go to my Instagram. It's Dan DeGraw Design, at Dan DeGraw Design on Instagram. Send me a direct message. I'm on LinkedIn. You can send me a message through LinkedIn, but I'm always kind of posting new artwork. So if you want to see kind of what I'm working on, go to my Instagram and check it out and send me a message.
Awesome. I appreciate it, sir. Thank you so much for your time. Really enjoyed our discussion.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the How We Interview podcast, brought to you by Riembi. Head to our website at howweinterview.com to find the show notes and links mentioned in this episode. While you're there, subscribe to the podcast through your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. Leaving us a rating and review also helps us reach more listeners interested in learning from other talent acquisition professionals.